Hi, I'm Julius Jessup Peterson of Root Seeds and Branches.
And I'm Monica Evans of MonicaEvans.com.
And this is our first podcast for How to Live Free in Trump's America. We're so excited that you are here. And today we're going to be talking about...
We're going to be talking about your place is not defined by others. White fragility as a form of bullying in the workplace. And so this is about, as a person of color, how sometimes dealing with your white bosses and white co-workers can make it hard for you to do your job effectively.
I find that in my work as a therapist and a coach that many who experience this firsthand feel that they have to be responsible for those who are struggling long beside them to cope with their privilege and their entitlement. It feels like there's no safe place to talk about what they're experiencing inside. And many of their colleagues of color are divided into two camps. Those who are willing to play what they believe is the game to move ahead, and those who become the enemy because they are grounded in their identity and they're clear that they don't belong and they are not owned by the people who are trying to force them to conform into something that's not authentic and true.
And unfortunately, for those people who find themselves grounded in their identity, they aren't able to be promoted. They find themselves as an outsider on team projects, and they find it hard to do their work effectively. And honestly, even for the folks who find themselves playing the game, there's always like a split that happens with inside of them where they aren't able to ever bring their full self to work. They aren't able to do their work effectively. And because even in terms of race or ethnicity, they still find themselves slightly on the outside of whatever interactions are happening with the white folks at work.
So today in our conversation, we want to talk to you about some practical things you can do if you find yourself dealing with pressure in the workplace from white colleagues, white employers, white supervisors, or people who look like you but feel that they need to oppress you to protect their own position.
Yeah. And just thinking about how to protect yourself, how to feel safe, and how to manage those emotions and the feelings that come up when you're just trying to do your job. You're really just trying to do your work. You're trying to do the things you need to do to be successful, and you're feeling like for whatever reason you're being held back.
So the first thing I would recommend to those who are listening, if you find yourself trapped or stuck or feeling powerless, to take a deep breath. Take a deep breath and remember all of the things that you overcame to get to this moment. And I just want you to breathe into that. Breathe into all the moments where people have discounted you, spoken ill over your life, said things or did things intentionally to attempt to make you feel small. Breathe into that and know that you are more than what you're dealing with. You're more than what you're experiencing. And that there's a power inside of you and around you that can get you through this.
Yeah. I think especially like those of us who are in the early to midpoint of our careers, there's like an anxiety around the importance of doing a good job, the importance of kind of building your portfolio of work, the importance of feeling like you're doing a good job so that you can get promoted, so you can have the income that you desire, so you will be in line for the next job, so that you create your colleagues, so that you can network and build your career. And what Julius is just saying is you've already overcome just by being there, actually, just by being in a position to do your job. And that in spite of all the folks that you feel like might be stopping you from doing your best work, or who are stumbling blocks or barriers to you, remember that what you do have access to, and remember that inside of you exists all that you need to be able to overcome what's happening currently so that you can move forward.
The second thing I want you to do, number two, is to remember all those who came before you. Mm-hmm. Take a deep breath. Think about the sacrifices and the trials and the pressure and the internal life of those that you've loved and known, those you've read about, those who you can reach out and touch, and those who have died and transitioned and are no longer here, but still survived and still loved and still labored. My grandmother used to have this saying that the mothers who came before us took the lash, kept the faith, and had babies. Mm. And still lived to see another day. Mm. And if we can remember what they felt and how that intergenerational line has led to our existence, we can tap into some internal resources that can also help us to live another day.
Yeah, I think about my own life and how hard my mother worked to help me and my siblings to have a good education, to do well in school, to have what we needed on a daily basis, and how she put her own life and her own needs and wants to the side to provide for us. And I mean, honestly, she still does. And how I use that love and I use the sacrifices that she made for my siblings and I to push me forward. And I use like that as a motivational tool to say, look what you've been given, and how am I going to use what I've been given to push my life forward and to be able to provide for her as she's in retirement now. And I remember being in church as a little girl, and we had testimony service on Sunday night, and I would always testify that like one day I'm gonna buy my mama a house, because I knew like that as much as she had given to me, I needed to be able to return that. And how in my life I've used that continuously of wanting to take care of my mom to force me into doing more than I actually would have done if I were just doing for myself, if I didn't have her, and wanting her to be proud of me and also not wanting her sacrifices to be in vain. I've used that to push myself forward.
For number three, after connecting with yourself and connecting with those who came before you, make a list of concrete things that are within your reach that you can do. Make a list of tangible actions that you can take today. It doesn't have to be a long list, just five. And really link those five things that you can do with the power that is in you in terms of what you know you can control and what has come before you and what was endured so that you could be at this point. These three steps are the first steps that you can take towards your own freedom.
Yeah, and when you're thinking about what goes on that list for number three, be thinking about what you need right now, what you're gonna need in the near future, in the next 6 months, and then think about some longer term things that you know you need and want in your life. And so I would want you to be thinking about, for example, do I need a new job right now? Has this place become so toxic that I'm not going to be successful here? Or do I need to find allies within this organization to help me feel more safe and to feel firm in a foundation of I'm going to be okay? I would be thinking about building your network outside of that organization. How can you being able to talk about your skills and what you bring to the table so that you are always in the mode of thinking about how to move yourself forward in your career, and to be thinking about what spaces help you to feel safe and spending more time in places where you feel safe and where you can feel heard. And I would also suggest finding a professional that can help you process those emotions so that you're not bottling them up inside of you.
Bottling up our emotions can lead to breakdowns in our marriage, in our relationships with our children, in our relationships with our siblings, in our relationships with people that we love so much in our lives. It's almost like our anger and that tension and that pressure that we bring home from our jobs can come out sideways, and in doing so, be destructive. Our trauma can become a weapon that not just injures us, but people that we love. For the next few minutes, I'm going to ask Monica to help me work through a scenario where we take these three pieces and help all of our listeners use them in a practical way.
Okay.
So I'm going to create the scenario, and we're going to call our character August.
Okay.
So August is a janitor at a local elementary school. Mm-hmm. He's about 50 years old, African American male. And as you think about August, I want you to think about that uncle that you had that always had candy to give you. or the gentleman down the street who made sure that you walked home safely after coming home from a party. That teacher you had in school that made you feel special and cared about. August loves his job at the school. But on a daily basis, August experiences microaggressions from the teachers who teach at the school, who don't value the kindness and the patience and the attention to detail that he brings to his job. And he deals also with the same level of aggression from the children who take their cues from the teachers at this school.
Okay.
And so August has been in this job for 20 years. He needs his pension. He needs his benefits. Mm-hmm. He cannot quit. He has a family at home that is counting on him. What does he do as the tension and the pressure inside of him raises up? And he starts to hate and resent the job that he's going to every day.
And like, that's so hard because it's sad. It's really sad when you love what you do and you get a level of enjoyment out of it, and then something turns in that sad way, where the people that you work with, who should actually be a part of your team, you should feel like a member of the team, are treating you like you're less than them, like they're better than you, and treating you like your contribution isn't as important as their contribution. And how that trickles down, like that negativity and that, it sounds like because the teachers are treating August in a particular way, the kids feel like they have a license to treat this elder man like he is less than at work. And that is so, I just can't even imagine that situation. But like the first thing that August needs to remember, like for me, what I would suggest to August in terms of what he needs to remember is that his contribution does matter, right?
So let's start at part one, August taking a deep breath.
Yes.
And remembering who he is in this setting.
Yes.
He has been in this job for 20 years. And he has cleaned and mopped the hallways.
Yes.
He's the one that fixed the broken lockers.
Yes.
He's the one that makes sure that the lights come on time and that the bells work. He's the one that makes sure that the school does what it needs to do when it's supposed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's power in that for August.
Yes.
Even if it's not acknowledged by those who are around him.
If he didn't show up, they would notice.
They absolutely.
If the toilet stopped weren't flushing, they would notice.
And so there's some dignity, there's some power, and there's some grounding in that from and knowing that there is power inside of him that moves everyone around him forward.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of waiting for those around him to get that first, he has to acknowledge it within himself and own it.
Yeah. And no, like, I think it's important, like we were just saying, that if the teachers walked in and the trash cans were full, like, they would notice. If they went to walk into a particular room in the school and the door was locked and they don't have a key, like, he is a powerful connector within that school. There are things that he's responsible for that no one else knows. Like, he is the expert in his arena. And so, like, he has to own that he has power and authority by virtue of himself and his role and his responsibility in the school that no one else there has.
Number two, remembering who came before him. August was trained by a predecessor who was another janitor in the school. Someone who saw the public schools in his county be integrated. Someone who cleaned, labored, and loved prior to the end of segregation. He's standing on the shoulders of people who paved the way for him to be there where he is to do this job, who he remembers through stories that were told to him that they were spat on and cursed and called everything but a child of God, but still did their jobs. And while him being a martyr is not noble, and him doing this job and smiling and putting himself in a position to experience violence is not completely necessary for his survival. Knowing that there are people who came before him that give him strength to endure helps him to make the choice about what he's willing to accept and what he's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just knowing that the work that you do you're not in a vacuum, that you're a part of something larger than yourself, and you're contributing to something larger than yourself.
And then the third part of this, making the list.
Mm-hmm.
August has options.
Yes. And like we started out by saying that August needs this job. He's not in a position or has interest in leaving his job. And so, but there are things that he can do to help himself feel better and to create a more positive work environment for him, in spite of kind of the microaggressions he's been facing. And so part of that means, so part of his list, what would you say it includes? For me, what his list includes is finding allies. Like, are there some teachers that he can reach out to talk about how he's been feeling, who will step in the gap for him?
Building a coalition of comrades.
Yes.
People who will use their privilege, their power, and their position to align with him to address a core objective that allows for him to be respected and included and acknowledged for his contributions and for his presence in this system. I would also say that it's important that he does research to know what his rights are.
Absolutely.
And how he can communicate within his setting what he will accept and what he won't. While he may want to stay on this job, it does not mean that he has to stay on the job as it is.
Yes, he does not have to continue to endure the negativity and the violence that he's facing right now.
And then I would say, beyond coalitions and knowing his rights, generate concrete actions that create synergy and impact with everyone that he's built a relationship with.
Say more about that.
So when we're taking a stand in response to minority stress, institutional violence, any form of systemic oppression, when we generate concrete actions and they're felt and endured and experienced by everyone around us, the impact shifts when we're not engaging in these acts alone. And so everyone in a system has a relationship to someone else. And if one person enrolls two people in engaging in a form of not allyship, but true solidarity, and then those people feel the impact and then they engage other people, then it becomes a movement. And so August has an opportunity to create a movement. A movement that lifts him up, that wraps him up like a blanket of love, and that moves him forward and moves everyone around him forward.
Because, I mean, the truth is, if August is facing microaggression, then the other people of color at the school are also facing them in some form or another.
Absolutely.
And so those people are also fighting to feel safe at work, and everybody wins when they are able to work together and feel better together.
So, ladies and gents, that wraps up our first podcast of How to Live Free in Trump's America. We thank you for your love. We thank you for your willing to listen. And snaps for the kids. We can't wait to see you, talk to you, and be with you once again.